Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
G'day, beloved listeners. There was a time in its history when Israel initiated defence cooperation with some of the world's nastier regimes, Argentina's military dictatorship, Pinochet's Chile, and apartheid South Africa. Why did it do it? It will be revealed on the programme when I talk to Sasha Podikas-Huransky, who's a senior editor at Foreign Affairs and a writer for the Trib. And I will also be introducing you to a wholly delightful human being, a thespian by the name of Sir Ian McKellen, a really lovely bloke and not devoid of talent. But first of all, time to talk to Bruce Shapiro, columnist with The Nation, exec director of the Dart Centre for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia. And I want to talk to you mainly about this latest pronouncement from on high in the Supreme Court. But just for a second, can you address the hit-and-run attack by McChrystal on the Obama administration in Rolling Stone?
The poor guy is in a certain amount of hot water. General McChrystal made the mistake of giving unfettered access of himself and some of his junior officers to a reporter for Rolling Stone and said some really unflattering things about the president, the vice president. His aides are quoted saying, you know, Vice President Biden, who's that? Complaining about a photo op with the president last spring. And McChrystal has been hastily called back to Washington. He's already proactively apologized, but it's a serious bump in the road coming at a time when Afghan policy is, of course, already in real chaos. You've had some evidence of little victories, little regions that seem to be stabilizing, and yet at the same time, a report due out today, in fact, is going to be detailing widespread corruption, U.S. money being used to pay off Afghan warlords, and indeed find it's making its way to the Taliban in order just to secure American supply lines. There's a real sense that Afghan policy has been in chaos in the last few months, and General McChrystal outing his big differences with the Obama White House in such public fashion is not going to help.
Well, he'll become a hero of the right-wing punditry. Let's look at this extraordinary defeat for the First Amendment.
Well, indeed, yesterday in the Supreme Court, Humanitarian Law Project versus Holder. You know, over the years from the McCarthy era, and then in fact going back to World War I forward, there have been periodic attempts to limit the ability of U.S. citizens to advocate or work with revolutionary or violent social change movements outside the U.S., the IRA, the Irgun, all kinds of groups over the years have had support within the U.S.
One would also think back to, say, the Stern Gang and some of the...
Well, exactly. The Stern Gang and early Zionism, certainly Palestinian liberation movements, North Vietnam, over the years, all kinds of folks. And until now, U.S. law has always protected those associations. But yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that, in fact, federal law can restrict the ability, that the federal government can prohibit Americans providing support, even for nonviolent activities, for organizations that are designated terrorist by the executive branch. And the irony of this case is that it involves something called the Humanitarian Law Project, which was actually working to bring traditionally violent groups, a couple of traditionally violent groups, in from the cold and teach them nonviolent social change methods. The Tamil Tigers and the Kurdistan Workers Party. In both cases, this Humanitarian Law Project was teaching them things like how to petition through the UN and do other things. But The Obama administration and its predecessor both sought to ban this kind of support, argued that, well, even if you're providing traditional nonviolent aid, medical aid, whatever, this is freeing up other resources for violent activity. This is the amazingly, actually, since September 11th, the first real stamp of approval on this kind of constriction of free speech.
I'm just wondering whether it might be applied to people who support a hypothetical flotilla of boats trying to break a blockade.
Well, it's certainly the law in question has been and will be applied to supporters of Hamas or indeed those intervening on behalf of Palestinians. So it's certainly
Significant decision. And here it is supported by Obama. I find that deeply disappointing.
Well, you know, one of the big tensions, people assume that American law and American politics are all about left versus right, but this is one of those times when what's really at stake is the power of the executive branch versus the traditional ability of the Bill of Rights to restrain the executive branch. And here you have a majority of the court, 6-3, including the people who claim they're right-wing libertarians, like Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas, as well as, it should be said, John Paul Stevens, all siding with the administration. And the problem with all this is that if you look over the course of the last 20, 30 years, which groups get designated as terrorist is, of course, a highly political matter. At various times, Sinn Féin and the IRA were on the list and then off the list. There's not some objective measure that feeds this. The dissent, which recognized these issues, three justices dissented, Justices Breyer, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor, and Justice Breyer, who wrote the dissent, took the very unusual action of reading it out from the bench. Justices only read out their dissents when they feel that fundamental laws are at stake. And Justice Breyer made it very clear in his dissent that he felt that, you know, at the height of the anti-communist purge, this was never done, that the threat of terrorist action abroad was not sufficient to erode the traditional power of the First Amendment.
Another concern about this is that Elaine Kagan, whose confirmation hearings start next Monday, argued personally for this law.
Well, indeed, she has been, of course, the Obama administration's Solicitor General. That is the office that argues Supreme Court cases. And this is one of the cases that she took a personal hand in. In that sense, there are kind of two important political facts here. One is that this is a personal victory for her. It burnishes her portfolio. She'll go into her confirmation hearings with this major victory that is bipartisan in a sense. It's going to be hard for, you know, Republicans to argue that she's soft on national security. But it's also important because it suggests something about the kind of justice she'll be. She may be liberal on many issues, but if this case is any reflection and the priority she gave to it is any indication, she will, she's a friend of the executive branch, a friend of the concentration of power in the executive branch, and that may turn out to be the fault line, as much of a fault line in this court as traditional liberal or conservative notions.
Bruce, thank you for that. Bruce Shapiro. And let me remind you that he is, of course, Executive Director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University, and that this is a little wireless program called Late Night Live on ABC Radio National and various multinational, transnational platforms. And in just a second, I'll be talking to Sasha Politko-Saransky about Israel and apartheid South Africa.